Moo and good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Pink Tron. I am Brent Robinson, and I am joined today by Chris Greenland. Chris, what are you drinking?
I am drinking, although I didn't do much yet today, I did go on a couple of light spins. I am drinking a recovery Miller Lite.
Very good, very good. And we'll go to Steph. Steph, what are you drinking? Steph Etienne.
Just finishing up my recovery shake because I didn't do the spring chickens race, but I did a ladder race and for the actual beer, another Hoegaarden garden like last week.
Very nice.
Nice.
And I'm also joined by Steve Pritchard. Steve, what are you drinking?
I have just finished No Spring Chicken, so I'm on pure H2O at the moment. And also sat in my bed trying not to die. So it's a
Yeah,
fun
we're
race, wasn't it, Sean?
yeah, Steve has been complaining about chest pains for the last 20 minutes, 30 minutes now.
And that brings us to Sean Fogenberg. Sean, what are you drinking?
I also race that, but that does not mean I'm on pure H2O. I have a whole desk full. I've got my recovery shake. I've got a Stash Panda hazy IPA from Hop Valley. It's a grapefruit hazy. I've got Rabbit Hole High Gold small batch bourbon for when I'm done with that. And then if I want more non-alcoholic stuff, I've got a mango passion fruit kombucha. And even if I drink all of these, I think I'm still probably going to be a pound lighter than when I started the race because I had a lake under me at the end of it.
I'm not staying on for round the horn, but this was going to be my potential round the horn topic of when should you weigh yourself? Because I've dropped nearly 2 pounds. I quickly jumped on the scales before the ride, and I've jumped on them just out of the shower now, and I've lost close to a kilo.
We may still have to do that because I can tell you what I do, which is probably like not what you're 100% not supposed to do. All right, and finally, I think we've got John Keenan. John, what are you drinking? It's really, truly a mystery as John is
I
having
know. I have no idea why my
video
camera's not
problems.
working, but I'm drinking hipster chocolate milk, banned in Canada from the Slate Corporation. Yeah, still got a couple of those left and then probably move on to water.
Sure, we could import it up here if we paid the proper amount of penance to the local monopoly.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You may have health care, but you don't have cool milk innovations.
That's right. Priorities, man.
Exactly. All right. And speaking of things that got to take priority in your day, a Zwift race like no spring chickens. And
Like
we've
nails
got.
on a chalkboard, Brett. Love it.
Still that
I got
still
to
better
keep up
than
with Steve.
Pritchard's last week.
Worth it for the groans and the eye rolls, though. I
I
regret
loved
nothing.
it. No, it was perfect. It was perfect, I assure you. That's the best part of missing recording the Pinktron is listening to Pinktron. All right, so the herd no spring chickens race number one is McCurry 40 in the McCurry Islands. It's the longest route in McCurry. It starts. Let's see if I can remember this because I have race. It starts at the Castle Pens, right? No, starts at the other
No,
pens.
but well, Castle Pens being the ones that go up the hill to the castle, I guess. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. The ones close to the castle in the Umezi part of McCurry, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And then goes up and around Umezi, over into Neokyo, does a bunch of Neokyo, then goes down through the Wind Caves into Urakazi, and you go all the way to Shisa Sprint, right? All the way over
Yeah,
Shisa
but
Sprint, up Shisa Sprint.
you do it kind of the backwards one, the one that you don't do the little like loop-de-loop. It's the one that's on pavement the whole time and is actually like that's I think the easier way up that little hill.
Yeah, I think that's right. And then, yeah, you do get to skip Mech Isle. So then you come back around Mech Isle, but you don't do the Mech Isle climb. So you get to skip that, which is kind of nice. on the outside of Mech Isle, but then you come up the what do you call that? That rise that goes up between Umezi and Urukazi. I can't remember what that's called.
The canyon climb.
I think that's the right word for it. Up the canyon climb, which is always what I like to call the land that hope goes to die. And then you finish on the uphill direction into the blue banner finish at just before you get to the castle.
Which is right after the lap banner. So you go through the lap banner, and then there's like a few hundred meters until...
The craziest tricky ending. I don't understand what they were thinking when they built this, but yes, there is a lap banner and then a finish banner that comes about 500 meters afterwards on the uphill.
Oh, this is the crazy incline blue banner finish?
Yep, that's the one.
Oh, gosh.
It's brilliant. If I've just shared with you guys on the chat we have, if anyone follows me on Strava, Zwift, records some video from the ride, and it's managed to get that sprint. And I absolutely nail a guy in the sprint who's just done a steady attack, and I've literally gassed the last 100 meters and sprinted past him on the climb. I really like this course. I think it was you, Sean, who said it's basically a four-minute power test at the start. But then pretty much until about 25Ks, you have to be basically daydreaming to get dropped. It does mean that people will try little half-hearted attacks to get those people. People would randomly just sort of roll through and just put a little effort in, and you'd have to up a bit to tempo to sort of hold in the group. And I know, Sean, you were saying that your group, anytime it hit dirt, people would just put the power down and just see if they could drop some people. But they weren't really kind of, in our group anyway, they weren't really kind of big attacks.
So I think you're right that, like, you kind of got to be daydreaming to get dropped once you've made a group. The downside is that 20-something K is so boring that it induces daydreaming. Nobody did get dropped in those bits out of our group, but there were some pushes. There was definitely a guy. So John was also in our group, and there were two people in our group that just really wanted to be pushing for whatever reason.
There were two guys that got dropped. Two Belgians.
Yeah, that's
somewhere true. In Umezi. I'm not sure where it was.
I remember it was so one of the guys in the little castle area in Neokio. One of the guys was off the front, and I pushed to catch him up that little hill going up into the like castle park.
Yeah.
And they were like 2 seconds off the back there, and they never caught back on because there was somebody in our group who just sat on the front at like 3.5, 3.6 for like most of the race. And like just whoever got dropped couldn't push hard enough to get back on.
I think the flip side of that 20Ks being really dull is it's quite a lot of time to recover. I basically went as hard as I could up that climb at the start, chasing Sean as hard as I could. Couldn't keep up with Sean. And then made a group. And I think it's interesting. I think because it's even before you get to the shitty climb, as Ben calls it, sprint, that climb there, I think, It's still quite a long way to the finish, and you've got the canyon climb as well. So I think people are almost afraid to put big attacks in there because they think they might be then caught back again. So we had some kind of people making it tough on the front, and you had to sort of sit and hurt, but you could sit in the draft. And so for our group, kind of sitting in the draft was about 2.5 watts per kilo. And then some people would occasionally try and do 4 on the front, and you might have to boost that up a bit. But I mean, we've all sat and done TTTs. You know, you can sit in the draft kind of at high 2s, 3 when someone's on the front at 4 and not die. And I don't think the climb The Shisa sprint climb that way round is actually quite draftable, isn't it? I found the other way tougher. I think it's a bit steeper, maybe a bit shorter as well. So I think people can put some like punchy efforts in and kind of drop people that way. But this one wasn't the case.
Tyler O'Callaghan tired?
That was what I thought.
I think he got a mechanical. Matt was saying he dropped.
Oh. Okay, that would make sense.
Tried to catch back on and then couldn't. But yeah, so once you made the Shisa climb, that's actually, it was surprisingly easy. I thought we were going the other way, which I found quite tough, but that was like a few little bumps, but nobody really put a big attack in on our group. But the climb where hope goes to die, as you called it, Brent, is just brutal. It just feels like it never ends.
So the thing that I find interesting about this race is that, so you've got that first 4 minutes, three to five, depending on, you know, where you're at, where you're going. Well, this is actually, there's that part of the race determines what group you're in, and the other climbs are of a similar length. So there's some matchmaking that happens at the beginning, that if you're not in the front group, you're probably in a group that you are going to be like pretty well matched with on the remaining climbs. And so that, while it means that, yes, it's going to hurt, it's going to hurt just the same for everybody in your group, unfortunately. And so you're gonna have, like, it's not, oh, there they go, it's well, I guess I have to suffer for another 10 minutes up this last goddamn climb. But the thing that I find really interesting about this start is there is some, at least for me, I went through many of the stages of grief, and I think I mostly I got stuck on bargaining, where it's like, this hurts. If I go harder, like, I had more to give in that first 5 minutes, but if I get into, like, one, it's unlikely that it's going to get me into a significantly better group. Like, I may have been able to latch on to the very back of the front group, but then I'm dead and I have 37K still to ride with nothing left. So there's this, like, internal low oxygen bargaining / like calculus that you have to do about how deep you go in that first climb and whether it's actually worth trying to make a better group, that if you make that better group, it means that the rest of the race is going to be hard.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. I kind of had that in the group I was in at the start, that it took a while to settle down. So even in the easier bit after climb through to Nyokia, there were times where I'm sat at threshold to stay in the group. The prospect of doing that, having done a kind of big effort and knowing that there's a couple of climbs coming up, isn't one that fills you with joy. I find that canyon climb, I always think I've just got to the finish as well. You're like, oh, it's just around this bend. And then you go around the bend, there's another little climbing bit. No, it must just be around this bend then. I can just never remember where the end is.
Well, I found with the different age group formats that, like, I was in serious bargaining mode at the end. I mean, our group, Sean's, I think you said they went off at like 800 or 900 meters. And that's a long way to go on that climb. And I was just realizing, like, I have no idea if I'm racing any of those people in my age group.
I was just
chances
say,
are probably, like, not. So I don't have anything left anyway. So
it was quite early on in the chat. Somebody was saying, "Are there any 60-year-olds in this group?"
Yeah.
Did Kev answer?
He did. I saw him say 61, and I'm like, all right, I don't have any chance.
Humble brag. Attaboy, Kev.
And he was only he only finished second among that age group. There was an A plus in the 60 pluses.
I think the biggest shock of the day is Matt Tevreitis losing in his group, wasn't it?
Yeah, last place.
I love it.
Tom Check Lawrence. The results for the passive in joke at Matt's expense there.
So how long is this race? How long does the suffering go on for? It's an hour?
Hour five for my group. And that was, I think...
D, who is the D at the moment, did it in just under an hour 20. I did it in under an hour 10 as a low C, so it's in that. I think most Cs should do it sub an hour 10.
Yep.
It's
always my goal to be under an hour. 40, it's almost exactly 40K.
The front definitely finished 56 something. Yeah. But getting under an hour required probably doing 3.4-ish for the hour.
Yeah, the 17th place has done 3.37. To finish in that front group in. And actually they must have got dropped because they've done just under an hour, 59:32.
What does 3.2 get you?
An hour and four, by the looks of it. Simon M, 3.2.
Put me down for it, 104. What did we ride for bikes? Steve, I assume you're on a Pinktron.
I nearly started on a TT bike because
the interesting last choice.
Nope. Fortunately, I was organized and did a warm up tonight. So it was like, nope, we'll get off that and on the Pinktron.
Oh, same.
Venge and Disc. I think I saw a lot of that.
I did see, and I get that, except for the fact that all of the separations here come on those climbs, on the little hills. Like I never felt, because it's a long enough race, I never felt limited by bike on the flatter sections.
It's also where, like you say, it's not where the race is hard. If this was a points race, I'd be like, 100% go that combo, because it's got those horrific sprints through the castle section, which I was really glad we weren't doing tonight. But I don't think any of the climbs are steep enough that you want a climbing bike. So it is Tron, it's the air road, it's one of the good all-rounders.
There is nothing really wrong with going with the with a Venge and Disc or something like that, because as you said, even those climbs are pretty shallow. Like they were, you know, you're going 25K an hour up them. So you are still moving. But yeah, I was on Tron.
Moving. There we go.
I guess you might just think about how many watts can you save and how much will that buy you if you're on a full arrow for the whole race, but is that going to make up for being a little bit lighter on the move? It's probably a wash.
I think it's good. Pretty steady on the flat. Like even Matt in the front group was saying, like, his average watts was pretty low. Every so often, people would bump up and try to pump it a little bit, but I think it's just so everyone knows where the points are that are going to make a real difference. So.
I think I was a little pessimistic that I'd be ITTing most of this race. I thought, I'm going to need to be as aero as I can because I might have one or two people with me at best. And it turned out better than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how was the turnout?
There were 48, I think, signed up, or at least that left the pen.
The results are around 40.
Yeah. Cool. So I was a little apprehensive as well. Going out for a 40, like this is a long race for a like HWR style race where there's, you know, it's everybody starting at once, and like what happens in HWR often is you split off because you blow up. So there is potential for carnage, but because it starts with a separation point, I think it ended up really nice for most people. Like I, you know, John and I ended up in a group right away with a group of about six or seven that was like, it was still five of us all the way to the end. So we rode together for 37K.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a very fair summary of what you're likely to experience here.
Yeah, we had a group of seven, I think, after the first time, that stayed together pretty much till the end. I got caught out by Catherine D, did a good attack, which is a dirt rider. She did a great attack over the gravel about 2Ks from the finish and just gapped and almost like TT to the finish rather than doing a sprint at the end on that climb. So,
Is she on dirt? She's on dirt now?
WKG, I can't remember.
Yeah, but also a herd rider. I think she was one of the penguins. Anyway.
She does still have a herd tag beside her name.
She does say herd. Oh, yeah. Why did I think she was anyway. One of those great moments of podcasting there.
Did we get a fact wrong?
I was going to say, are we going to have to bring in a fact check section? We have to get Sean to edit in the fact check on the Pictron. God, it'd be as long as the episode.
Brent's really,
a good cyclist. Fact check.
Nope. What I didn't realize was going to happen, possibly because I didn't read the Facebook post correctly, is Zwift Power has automatically sorted results. So that's really cool. You check out Zwift Power straight away afterwards and you can see your age cap results. So Sean and I are both C's. I'm glad I wasn't relegated to a lower category by this scoring system.
Yeah, I don't know how that what it's going to do for like Zwift Racing .app and all that other good stuff, but guess we'll see. Good. Well, the series is away. It'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. Let's move along to Herd Beginner Racing for the week. We are doing
Ben Flats, it seems. Flats
for
from Nate's post, three laps for the two highest categories and then two laps for the lowest, the E subcategory. Yeah.
And with the 4.5K lead-in, like it's basically the lead-in is one lap. So
yeah, basically.
So it's going to be, 19.5K for the longer route and 14.5K for the other ones. It's the name pretty much says it all, beginner racers. It is the Fan Flats. There is, I think, one little section that goes to like 2-3% for maybe 200 or 300 meters. Other than that, it is basically flat the whole way around. The finish line is at the sprint banner, which is just after the U-turn. By the time you get to your third lap, you should know where that is, probably.
Hopefully.
Take your best aero bike you got. And I don't know if there's much else to say about it other than that. Probably sit in and win the sprint if you can.
Yeah, I think I remember from previous sprint rounds, the only thing that might cause some things. There are some cobbled sections, so I don't know if with the new terrain changes it might affect things, but yeah, it will probably come down to a sprint anyways.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys. When I race that Richmond stuff, I don't find those cobbles change the race for me at all. Like the first part of it is it's so long, so everybody's going to be on the same stuff for so long anyway, and then it's not, I don't know, it doesn't change really how the bikes feel in terms of speed and stuff. Like maybe you scrub 1 or 2 kilometers an hour at most. So everything is the same. I mean, you sit in the draft the same, you sprint the same. Like, it just doesn't really change my race at all.
And no one is seeing, oh, there's cobbles, I should attack here. It's that no one like sees it and makes it harder. So
yeah.
Well, it's definitely not Belgium cobbles, so
it is not. So yeah, good for on our HBR racers, get out there. Again, just if you are listening to this for the first time, you're being a racer, it's just a scratch race. So the finish line is just the finish line. You don't have to worry about points or KOMs or sprint times or anything else. All right. That will bring us to Climber's Gambit, Chris.
Oh, shoot. Yeah. Climber's Gambit. I hope everyone had fun getting up the leg snapper last weekend.
I would have had more fun. Is it you that beat me by a second and a half, Sean?
Yeah, except it didn't count because I did it as a we'll talk about it when we talk about our our continuing bike issues.
Fair enough.
Well, now that is behind us, we are going up everyone's favorite. We've been up at about 17,000 times, the Watopia KQOM. So straight out of the downtown Pens and right on the hill. What is that like? It's like a 2.5, 3-minute, 4-minute effort. Just right out the gates.
I think my PB's
about two.
Two. All right. So between 2 and 4, depending on where you're at. But key takeaways, you're right on the start line, pretty much right out of the Pens. So come warm it up if that's your thing. But we'll be out of there in about 3K total. So nice quick win this weekend as well.
Good preparation for my we'll probably do this in the morning, tomorrow morning, and in the evening I have a ladder race, Downtown Titans, which has also the hilly KOM. So nice recon, see which power I can produce.
Love it.
Yeah, I guess definitely warm up, eh? I think on this one. It is like 1K basically from the start line to the start of the climb, so be warm. And then what do you guys, when you guys ride this, like, I guess because this is like a TT style one, I don't know if it changes anything, but I always find that I'm a little less hard than others at the start and harder than others. Like, I always seem to catch onto the group back at the top. I don't know. I don't know if that's just me or.
Yeah, I think it for this one, for Climber's Gambit, it kind of depends on how well you know what your approximate 2-minute power is. Because so when I know well, the first ramp is steeper, so you can make more time up there and you're fresher. So I will go over my expected power on that first part, get a little quote unquote recovery doing like threshold through that flatter part. And then it's just like a minute of holding on and pushing whatever I have left. But there is the other version of that where you kind of go at your target power or a little below for the first half and then push whatever you've got left over that last part, which if you have more than you expect could get you, you know, could make you up some time. Yeah, I guess it just kind of depends on how well you think you know what you've got in the tank.
Yeah, for me, definitely it's the first option. If I recall my previous attempts, I usually go hard and you have that U-turn, indeed that U-turn, flatter section, recovery a bit, and then just give it everything you have in that final uphill section. So yeah, it's about to see.
Yeah. Fair enough. Bike. Full climber, it's steep enough for that. I mean, it's like hits 11% right at the start, so the speed scrubs off pretty fast. So I think full climber.
Think you're right.
Yeah.
I haven't made a decision on what I'm gonna do yet, but if it's either gonna be full climber or Tron.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't take anything heavier than Tron.
Yeah, I was thinking that second section is more suited for Tron, but that first section, like I said, is pretty steep, so.
Yeah, and I mean, it does. There is a little flat finish bit that, yeah, you might get a little juice on the arrow if you're sprinting out at the end, but
So,
either of those.
for my best effort, averaged 16.3 miles an hour. And I was on a Tron for that, and that was in a Climber's Gambit. That's pretty fast. That's at 5.8 watts a kilo or so for 2 minutes. So if you're faster than that, I would say Tron. If you're significantly below that, I would say climber bike.
That makes sense. Good. I think that brings us to herd of mountain goats. The mystery route yet again.
It seems mighty metropolitan if I look at the overview of the schedule.
Okay, it's not in the tab. Got it, right?
Yeah, it isn't filled in the tab, but it's on the home schedule.
Yeah. Mighty Metropolitan is going to be a bunch of New York nonsense.
Pretty tame for it seems for mountain goats. 20 kilometers, only 300 meters of elevation. Finish at that at the lap banner at the uphill sprint section, but only the.
I'm in a bet.
Yeah.
It's not updated yet, and it's going to be a custom, and it's going to be a lap and a half finishing at the second KOM.
The only one is the New York KOM reverse, so it might finish indeed on that, and it's about a 30K-ish
Yep.
if it's
Yeah.
so the lap and a half probably.
Yeah, I think if you're racing mountain goats, you better count on it being a lap and a half of Mighty Metropolitan.
Yeah, I was about to say if it's just one lap, it seems a bit tame. Or
The routes aren't updated yet, still showing Bambino Fondo and Zwift Hex, so.
I was about to check, but yeah.
So yeah, I think we should bet on it being, yeah, 30K, up the KOM, back down, around the outside bits.
We can rename it Mountain Guess for the race.
And then yeah, I guess the steep part there. Yeah, there's some steep nonsense in the normal new rolling bit, but twice up Newark KOM reverse, technically, which are each 1.1 kilometer at 5.7%. They are very steep.
Yeah, it's the climb for people that do not know. It's the stair-steppy climb.
Yeah, you're probably going to get a pretty chill rollout for the first 10K, and then it'll be full gas to the KOM, and then it'll all be broken apart pretty much. So have fun, all you mountain goats. All right, and that would bring us to the Stampede, which we are doing two laps of Classique this week. So we start at the London Pens. Do the 5.7K lead in up through the Flamme Rouge and on to through the Admiralty Arch and on to the Mall, and then it does the classic loop around the Mall twice, which is pretty flat. So kind of a little punchy bit up Northumberland Street, but other than that, pretty much just sit on your power and try and get 16.5K on that route. B's, fast B's will probably be 24 minutes, I think. A's will be in the 22-ish type minute range.
C's and D's. 26. Yeah.
Yep. D's probably can get it in half an hour, I would think. Yeah. Over 33K an hour. Should be all right. So,
Brent, do you do a general classification for the whole series of 10?
Yep. So it's by points.
Okay.
It's each week is 100 points. The fastest time across all the stuff gets 100 points, et cetera, et cetera. And then your best 8 of 10 results count.
Okay.
So we're on, this is week
nine.
So right now, for example, in the B's, there's only one guy who's got all 8 races in. Oh, sorry, there's two guys have 8 races in, and then there's a handful who have 7 in.
Any good battles going on?
Yeah, the C's is 17 points from Peter Knapp, who's usually pretty up there. D's, there's two who've done them, all of them. Paul Lootman does his. It'll be an interesting battle for second and third. A, Kev Fowler's got 7 in. He's running away with the thing. Not too many other A's have finished up. But the B's. Yeah, Hirschberger and Stagg are 1 point apart right now. So, and they both got 7 races. So their next one and then their best one in the next one counts. So they'll definitely be out there trying to smash each other to try and see who can win. That's a real good fight. The guy in front of him, I think they're 40 points behind him. That'll probably be for the number. That'll probably be for first place between Rob Hirschberger and Jamie Stagg. Both I used to Jamie Stagg and I have had like some political series. I think he beat me last series, but Rob Hirschberger has pretty consistently beats me. I think I've maybe nipped him a couple times, maybe, but both very good B time trialers. So. Yeah, I have not been racing because I've been trying to do longer stuff on Sundays. / my bikes are broken. / I've been traveling. So, sorry, Stampeders. All right, and that brings us to the Bullseye Wednesday,
which is not listed here unless I need to refresh the page again.
Yeah, it's on the Bullseye tab. There is one.
Gotcha.
Now I can never remember this. Is that the uphill sprint or the downhill sprint?
the downhill sprint, I think. Not with going up the ramp and that. No, then it's the slightly uphill sprint because the forward is when you get that little kicker and it goes down a bit to the banner. So it's the other way around. It's where you come from the intersection with where you go up the glassy roads up to the newer KOM. It's that.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's the clockwise one.
Yeah, it's kind of the sprint itself is a bit of a dish.
Yeah.
It's a little bit down, a little bit up at the end.
Yeah.
But it's not the one where you climb in and then it's downhill into it.
Yeah. Seems 7 laps, 8 sprints. Yeah. Lead in until the banner and then 7 laps. Makes sense.
Yeah, the only thing I guess to watch for is it is hilly coming out of the sprint. Like there's kind of you're going down that thing and then that bypass is a little bit rolly and then it comes back up when it goes to the other side. So you got to just make sure you don't get dropped. Just in case.
Yeah.
When you're gassed coming through those sprints.
Yeah, and it's a pretty shortish lap, I think 3.5K. If I remember correctly.
Says, Zwift says 2.8 Zwift Insider.
Okay, so it's even shorter.
Yeah, it comes up fast. And it's a tricky start. Like, I mean, I know it's bullseye, so you don't really need to like see the start of the sprint segment per se to see where the banner is, but it is like around a turn. I find it always a bit tricky to time where the finish is of this, like where you're trying to hit those, that banner. So if you see people, I say from the corners a little far, but once you're past that corner, it's not too much further. So get ready.
Oof. I just looked at what the No Spring Chickens is next week, and it is a longer and maybe a bit harder race than this week's. Cool.
what is
which,
it?
Which will not have a nice way to break everyone up right at the beginning. So it's a custom finish on Caspat. 43K, so it's almost
more than a lap.
It's almost two full laps, but the finish is going to be at the top of the Petit KOM.
Yeah. Yeah.
The second Petit KOM.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The first place that this really has potential to break up is the Aqueduct.
Yeah, I was about to say that, but that's a clockwise version where you have the first like 10K flat aqueduct, then a little bit bumpy, and then up the petite KOM, actual.
For a lot of us, that means that the first 15K is going to be brutal. Just hanging on to the group that I'm sure there is going to be attacks going off the front and lots of early dumb stuff. Where we're just trying to survive. And then again, this is me pre-bargaining. is it better to drop a little earlier just so that you don't have to suffer so much when you get to the KLM?
Well, it's going to depend, right? I'm sure we'll go more in depth on this next week, but size of group, composition, location. Yeah.
All of the above.
It's a fun five-dimensional puzzle.
Oh, but luckily I'm not going to be in town next week. Darn. I'm going to have to miss it.
Oh, where are you going and can I join you?
friend is throwing a camping birthday party festival type thing, so gonna be out of town for that.
I mean, you could always just go ride cast paths as hard as you want for fun.
That's true. I could bring my bike.
I'd ridden cast paths enough in group rides, but I never really noticed any of those little undulations until I started racing it. Right. Like those little like 100 meter 2% things, and it's like, wait, there's an incline here, and then people are just off the front trying to break everybody. It's like, oh, I should pay attention to this, I guess.
Well, the other big difference about racing on any of those flat French courses compared to just riding around in them is that the Aqueduct KOM, especially the one direction, starts about 500 meters before the Aqueduct KOM starts.
Oh, yeah. You're almost done by the time you get to the beginning of the climb. Like, yeah.
They really start sending it off before the climb bit starts. You get on the bridge and stuff. So,
yeah.
Good fun.
This is also the direction that ATP just starts attacking for no reason about 5K in.
And they are bound to be in road races. I've seen them, lots of them before. So,
wonder if you can like bribe someone who's like on your team, but who's in a different age group than you to like just drag you around. Like, go hard, but don't go too hard. I'll mention you on the Patreon.
Yeah. Ask John.
That's what I was doing today.
Yeah.
There you go. Right, that brings us to, I think, around the horn. We're going to talk about more mechanical troubles and all that good fun stuff.
Yeah, Chris had a science experiment, but his bike didn't break.
Yeah, not yet anyway, I guess. Still
Right.
good.
Yeah, no, I
Did you
thought
get
I had
the
a. Oh, well, yeah, I was going to say I thought I had a spare handlebar, but it's the wrong bar diameter for my current stem. So I either got to get shims, which I don't have, or still invest in a new handlebar.
Well, you could use Miller Lite. That's a good shim.
That's true. If I cut enough of these cans on the side, it's a
And are
good
you full like
thing.
are you like you would like put on handlebars and like rerun all the cables and all that stuff, or do you just not need to do that now because you have play or click or whatever?
Well, here's the thing. Like, so the rusty bike, the rusty handlebar bike, is essentially like the one that that is fully tuned and road ready.
Oh
But
no.
the only reason that was on the trainer is because the backup one had the cable snap. So this past weekend, I recabled as much as I was able to my quote unquote dedicated trainer bike. So that's back on the trainer now with intact handlebars. So that's good. And then I can move forward with a handlebar swap on the one that I can actually ride outside. And I'm ready to rig up the pink lights on my trainer bike too. So that's going to be a cool little disco show in the garage.
Love that.
Yeah, I mean,
You're building yourself a pink Tron.
effectively, yeah. Yep. So, but it sounds like from the troubles that everyone else is having, I'm on the happy side of mechanicals at the moment, which I never would have thought a couple of weeks ago.
Well, I mean, I guess, well, you guys have all heard the story, but so basically, I was riding in a Rando's ladder race on Tuesday night. And so on the Sunday on the weekend, well, I guess how far do we want to go back? So I've got FSA Omega cranks on my bike, and the way they're thread, and the way they thread on is just with like a 6 mil or 8 mil hex wrench. You just stick it in there and tighten it up. And like when I about 2 years after I first got the bike, the left crank arm fell off. Took it into the LBS, like where I bought it from, and they're like, "Oh, that's weird." Here, they fixed it all up. It's fine. And I'd never had any problems with it until maybe 2 years ago, doing Zwift riding, a lot more Zwift riding on it than I'd ever had before. And then I got kind of loose and I just like, oh, okay, I just got to tighten this up. And then like a year ago, I need to get tightened again. And then like a month ago, I need to get tightened again. And then on Sunday, I was riding it and it like came loose again. And it feels weird, right? Because it just like feels like loose. Like it feels like you're actually, your cleat is not tight in the pedal, is what it actually feels like, because your foot kind of shakes side to side. You get used to it and then you're like, okay, I got to fix that. So I tightened it up on Sunday, didn't ride on Monday. And then Tuesday, riding with the randos, I warmed up, no problem. And then 5K into our race, my left crank arm falls right off on the ground. So, I mean, could I have picked it back up and screwed it back in and finished for 1 point? Probably. Thankfully, they won the race, so I don't feel too bad about that. But it is now apparent at this point that the threads, I think, are just shot. They're just worn out essentially from, I don't know what the failure point on these threads, or why it wears out from use, if it's just little subtle movements over time, just loosen them off or whatever. But I'm getting a new pair of cranks. Terry Rigby has shipped me some old cranks from a bike he's got laying around. So it's like, these will work. I'm like, okay, great. So I'll get those hopefully put on for Saturday. That says they're out for delivery to my house right now. So that's
You don't
gonna be
think it's
my.
the spindle on the bottom bracket that stripped the threads on the spindle?
He's sending me like that part too. That he's
The
got like
bottom bracket too.
fit
Yeah.
spacers that go with the cranks. Yeah,
Nice.
because it could be, you're right, it could be some, it's a combination of it, right,
Yeah.
of the cranks cranking, go tightening into the bottom bracket. So anyway, not fun. But
So did it just you're still clipped in, so did the thing just like come, your foot just your foot goes to the ground, and then you're just standing on, like you've got
yeah,
a crank
literally, like
dangling from
for,
your foot.
I did 100%. I almost took a picture of it like that.
Oh,
It was just, yeah, it's just hanging off your cleats on, you're standing there going, whatever. And you're right out, it was literally on Breakaway Bray, the first like attack point in this race. And I think I went, My crank arm just fell off. And Nathaniel Hopkins, the psychologist, goes, seriously? I'm like, yep, fuck, sorry. And then I just, like, I knew it was giving nothing but a stream of all the worst curse words in the world. So I just ghosted the Discord, quit out of the race. I was like, ugh. Started searching up crank compatibility.
My version of that was in leg snapper climber's gambit this week. I had done one on Saturday, and I this is the series that I'm like, I'm gonna try in the bees, and unfortunately I did just realize, like, I'm not gonna get all the five races because I'm gonna be gone next weekend. But I did an effort on Saturday. Hungover, a little hungover. Did all right. Did a good time. But I was like, I want to get a better effort in on Sunday. And I got into a race. Chris was in there. There was like actually, I don't know, 20 bees signed up or something. So I was like,
yeah,
okay,
this
is like I'm gonna get a good estimate of where I'm at relative to the bees with my short power. Did a good warm up, and I get to the hill, and I think we had talked about, like, the best way of doing it is like sprinting into the base. You've got like that little lead in where it's really nice to have some speed going into it. I start spinning up and my chain drops as I'm like two pedal strokes in. But I had gotten up to speed, and now I'm like past the line and at the bottom of the hill. Like, well, again, time for some expletives. get the chain back on, and I try to crank it, and it's like the weirdest feeling. There's like so much resistance, but it's not actually like turning the trainer, like it's not turning the flywheel. And if I rotate back, it just goes loose, right? So the free hub is not free. And I look down as I'm riding and I realize, oh, it's actually I'm spinning one of the cogs of the cassette without the rest of the cassette moving.
Like, that's not good.
No, this was so I take my bike off the trainer. I look down and like the whole cassette is, I can like wobble it back and forth. Similar to you, I had had some issue there where the lock ring was not fully tightened down. And this is, you know, I've been riding this trainer for 2 years now, so it's not like this was a constant problem, but over time, I guess it loosened enough that, you know, I finally, you know, I'm doing sprint power, and it just said, nope, we can't hold on to that. And then I tightened it, but I didn't do a good job of getting it in place beforehand. So I set the bike back up, and it's all over the place. It's wobbling back and forth. It's like, I did eventually get it back on. And I, with my newfound rage at my bike and my trainer, ended up doing, I think, a 47 up Innsbruck ring, or up the leg snapper at like eight plus watts a kilo. So I was, and apparently Pritchard was in Innsbruck and saw me doing something, like switched over to watch and was just like, what are you doing, man?
Venting, clearly.
Yeah, smashing the hell out of this hill. Like, what else do you do when you're in Innsbruck?
Yeah.
Well, that's so did it, like, the free hub or has like all those little, oh, I don't know, mine, I've only really finished right now, but it has like the lines, right, where the cassette like grabs it, So does it just wasn't grabbing that? It was just spinning around those?
I was on the smallest cog. When I was trying to get this figured out, I'm like moving around. I got it into the smallest cog and I'm pushing. And that cog was off of the splines and just like grinding around, which was I was almost certainly doing some maybe not permanent damage to it, but like it wasn't probably not good for that cassette.
Because that cog is threaded to go into the rest of the cassette and lock on the rest of the cassette.
Yeah.
So yeah, you were probably trashing the threads on that last little piece.
Oops.
Yeah.
Maybe Terry Rigby has a spare cassette he can send you.
It's been fine since. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, like it's just your trainer free oven cassette, right? Like cassette in terms of bike parts is not the worst one after a place. And the free hub part, I imagine you can just pull that off if you had to, but it's probably fine. It's just a trainer one, right?
Yeah.
I haven't had a mechanical in a long time, but I did have a very hilarious ghost mechanical. This is back before I was Zwifting. I was riding to work primarily as my biking, and I had decided I was going to ride fixed gear for a winter because it would make me stronger and less. Yeah, anyway. And so I was doing that and surviving most of the winter. And I come to one day and I got a flat on the bike and I don't have time. So I just grab the regular freewheel bike that's still got air in the tires. I got to get to work and I get out and I start pedaling down the street. And it feels like there's this weird resistance at the top and the bottom of the crank stroke. And like there's a rubber band on my chain somehow. And I get off and I look at it and I spin the cranks and I pick up the bike and spin the cranks forward and everything's fine. And I get on and do it again. And it still feels like there's this weird resistance that's pulling my legs backwards whenever my feet are at the top and bottom of the stroke. And I'm just like, I don't know what's going on. And I get into work and I talk to a friend of mine who's a bike racer. And he says, yeah, you dummy, you're normally riding a fixed gear and the wheel is just slamming your feet forward at the top and the bottom. You're not putting any strength into it. That's all your momentum on the bike that's pushing your feet forward. And when you're not on the fixed gear and you're on a freewheel bike, you have to provide all that energy. I'm like, oh, yeah, that totally makes sense. But I was convinced there was something wrong with my bike.
If you want to talk about other weird mechanical ones, I mean, I had a situation with my triathlon bike, my TT bike, and on those TT bikes, the clearance on the frame and the wheels is like very low for aero purposes, right? Especially like the back one, like it clears the carbon by millimeters. And I hadn't quite got the skewer seated or the dropout a bit, and it's a horizontal dropout or something, so it was like just a bit twisted in there. So the wheel was not clearing the frame, it was rubbing against the frame on the tire. Well, I didn't know, and I think I was even like, set it up for a race and you spin it around, it seemed okay. And then like I get out in the race and it's like, why does it feel like I'm pedaling through absolute mud right now? Like, what is happening? And then I'm like, why does my bike smell like it's burning? And I like got back and I'm like, oh, I figure out what's going on. I take it into the LB. I was like, why is it doing that? And he like, oh, the little I don't know what the grommeter, whatever it is that goes in the frame, it actually come loose from use or whatever. And he's like, oh my god, I thought, like, I don't know how this tire didn't blow up, like you're like through the tire.
Because just shaved the rubber of the tire right down to the
like 20k like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a good one. I was riding around on the bike I'm riding now, and
do you have a guess on how many kph did that cost you?
Oh, at least 5, I gotta think. Like, it wasn't, yeah. Anyway, it was, like I said, it was a 20k race, so maybe I could have finished the bike in 35 minutes maybe, and it was like 38, something like that. So anyway, that was at the Vulcan Tri, I believe. And then the one I'm on now, after doing some stuff, I'm riding along, all of a sudden it starts making this noise, like ping, 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 every pedal stroke. And I'm like, what is going on? And I'd get off. I could never replicate it when I was just doing the pedals with my hands. I get back on a pedal, bing, bing, bing. I'm like, what is happening with this thing? So finally, like one time I'm like pedaling, and I look, and just the little like derailleur cable end on the front derailleur had just like twisted a little bit to the right. So
Oh yeah.
every time I like pedal, I like hit this stupid cable end, it would just go thunk, thunk, bing, bing.
With your
Like, oh.
shoe, probably,
Yeah,
not with
exactly.
the yeah.
Yeah, when you do it with your hands, or right, you don't quite put your hand in the exact same position as where your shoe
Yeah.
goes around. So it's like, oh, so I crimped that back. No, it's fine. It's quiet again. Yeah, bikes are crazy like that. Although I guess I would be curious. We could maybe finish off on this. Is like, so like, let's assume that this bike was like totally shot, and but money was no object, which it is. But let's just assume for the fun of a podcast, would you guys go back to getting a bike on trainer, or would you get something like a kicker bike? So I kind of like was thinking about it. It's like, oh, what if my bike is shot? So I started shopping around. I'm like, I don't know. Like, I've already got the trainer. I ride a lot on Zwift,
Yeah.
I've got too many bikes. That's my problem. I can't justify buying a bike that doesn't go anywhere in addition to all the bikes I have.
Personally, because I like all my outdoor riding is on the same bike that I do my indoor riding, like, and I don't really have the space for it. I would have to just get another bike, but there is something really not like I realized that I don't think I've done an outdoor ride in like 3 or 4 months now. Like it's starting to get nice out and I'm gonna start doing that again, but I could see sweat like if I lived somewhere that wasn't so nice to do outdoor rides, like I could see switching over fully to just saying, yeah, no, I'm an indoor cyclist.
yeah, I mean, I've got my mountain bike, but I don't, I mean, you can put that on for Zwift, but I don't think it quite works that hot, frankly. I just, yeah, just I was thinking about like all the kilometers I've put on my bike on Zwift, and I know it's not quite the same stuff, but like it does all the moisture, all the stuff that Chris has been dealing with. Yeah, you do put a lot of wear and tear on components just sitting there that like, I mean, that bike probably would have lasted me another 10 years at the amount of kilometers I was putting on it if I just had something else that was just on the trainer, or just a trainer bike that's designed to like put up with all the sweat and moisture and digital shifting and all the other sort of stuff. So
I think if
yeah,
my
I
other family members were more into it, it would definitely be worth it, right? If other people were going to
yeah.
jump on and, do a race or a long ride,
Oh yeah, are they more quickly adjustable? Because my wife does have like a little spin bike that she uses, but
yeah, I think they are. I mean, relatively quick. I mean, it doesn't require tools, at least the kicker version does, and I don't know about the SV20.
I think they're all you just like quick release, just boop,
Yeah.
boop, move it back, and now like that's you just know that's where my seat goes. You can adjust where the handlebars and the seat is, and I think
Except
even on
they're
the
indexed, they have like little notches and numbers and
yeah.
letters on them.
I
Yeah.
think even on the kicker bike, you can I can't remember if it's the kicker or the tacks or whichever one, but you can even change what the effective crank length is.
Yeah, kicker bike has that for sure.
Like you can,
So
there's
there's
like a,
like three different holes for the
oh
pedals,
wow,
and you can
okay.
like if you move
Got it.
if they're on here, it's like a 175. If it's here, it's like a 165 or something
Got
like
it.
that, and, or
Oh yeah,
maybe it's
wow. That's not
170.
quite quick release, but
No,
yeah,
but
if you got a pedal wrench, you can
it's
take them out and
pretty
put them
quick.
on.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah,
Yeah.
well, unless it's, go ahead, Steph.
Yeah, I was about to say I've now the bike I use is my old road bike that I've been using for 10 years, switched April 2022 to a new road bike, joined Swift like a year ago. Like last Saturday was my Swift anniversary, my first year on Swift. And yeah, basically because I live in an apartment block on the top floor, basically that's the bike that I've now on my Swift hub is basically my indoor bike, because also I have a dedicated outdoor bike because I ride very, almost on a weekly basis in the weekends outdoors. So having to get it off the trainer, back on the trainer, and having to deal, I live on the 9th floor of an apartment complex. So, and I technically can't use the lift to move my bike. So it just stays on the trainer, and have a dedicated bike for outdoor riding. So it's
that lives on the ground floor.
Yeah,
you've got like bike storage. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a storage room in the apartment, in dedicated for my storage, and there this is my expensive bike, my normal day-to-day work bike. It's just in the communal bike storage space. But
so if your trainer bike broke and money was no object, would you get another trainer bike, or would you just say, no, I'm getting a kicker bike?
I have to think about it. maybe it depends on what's the problem with the bike, because at a certain point while trying to move my bike, the rear derailleur came loose, but I brought it to my local bike shop, and it just luckily it wasn't broken off, so they couldn't mount it back. So
if someone came to you tomorrow and said, you can either have this, kicker bike, or a Wahoo 5 with, whatever low end Tiagra something on it that you're just going to leave on it, would you take the kicker bike, or would you want the trainer on it?
Depending if I have the money for it and can afford the expense, maybe, yeah. I don't know. Because I spent a lot of still a decent amount of time indoors. Now with the training, I spent 2 or 3 days during the week working out on the indoor trainer. So
yeah, I don't, like I said, I was always on Sean's boat, that I always justified that I never would want to get the trainer bike, because I want the bike I ride on the trainer to be the bike I ride on the road. But the more I realize how much wear and tear you can actually put on your bike on the trainer, or I think it might be, get the sizing right, and how much different is it really?
Yeah, and it's even if I didn't live on the 9th floor, it's just because it was an old bike I could use, but having to connect it to the hub, get it off. It's just such more easy to keep it on one place and have a dedicated bike for outdoor riding. I just have to deal with the hassle getting it off and on the trainer.
But, yeah. How about you, Chris? What do you want to put in the garage?
Man, I like the flexibility of having an extra rig that you could take off the trainer. Like, there's something to be said for that, but yeah, I'd probably go extra bike and bolt on. But yeah, I agree. That dedicated indoor is really, really tempting. Some of those offerings are nice.
Yeah. Although, so it's not an obvious choice for sure. I will say, I saw someone post about the kicker shift, that they figure they lost like 100 or 200 watts in their sprint on Zwift from switching from a regular kicker to a kicker shift, because of the way the forward the back thing worked, they just couldn't get torque anymore.
Oh,
whether that was legit or not, I don't know, but anyway. because all those new ones that come with all that. And that's, I mean, I guess that'd be the other fun part of getting, like I assume none of us here have like climb or any of that jazz, do we?
No, that would be the other thing. Is like
to get in the kicker bike is like it actually like elevates up on you. It'd be kind of cool.
Yeah,
it would be kind of cool. Someone just needs to drop me a big pile of cash in my.
You need to have it at the fitness center, right? You need to be able to walk into whatever.
Just start embezzling county funds.
Oh, Lord. I will tell you about some of the residents that we have in town and what they think is happening afterwards. I don't want to
put it as an expense.
That's right. I'll just expense it.
Are kicker bikes even available in Canada? Can you get them?
You can. I think you have to go through a dealer, though.
You get all your milk, your illicit milk, and a kicker bike too. Check it out.
Oh my god!
By the way, Kank, just with play, is it still not being able to ship to Canada, or is still not?
We just this week we did get. You can now get the Wahoo, or the Wahoo Zwift kicker thing with the cog and the click available in Canada this week, and the 1 year subscription, that whole deal is here. It is $1,000 Canadian.
So that came last. The Zwift Play came about 6 months ago, or even less, and that's still not available. Nice.
Yeah. Although to be fair, they can't get that stuff in New Zealand or Australia potentially. I can't remember. I saw when they put the post up in Zwift Riders, I saw somebody from New Zealand complaining, like, we can't get this here. What are you going to do it for us? So, you know, it's hard off because Canadians are. There's other people just as hard off, I suppose.
Yeah. It's been working pretty good, although this ladder race, it was a bit, the connection was a bit dodgy. It kept connecting and disconnecting at certain points. So.
Brent, it is what it is. Are you ordering one to ship to Chris's house and then picking it up at the race?
Oh yeah,
a bike or Zwift Plays.
Zwift Play.
Well, there's a former cast member who had picked one up who I might be able to make arrangements with.
Hmm.
So we've talked about it. So I am hoping I am coming home with them theoretically.
Well, I'll be in BC in April. If you need, I can hand them off.
Through the fence? The border?
Well, no, I'll be on the Canadian side, but not that close to Brent.
Yeah, I find them quite enjoyable if they don't keep connecting and disconnecting, the virtual shifting, the everything. The steering is sometimes fun at the ladder race. So it was at the end with me by myself with four of the opponent's team and one or two. I have steering as well with the Zwift player. They have it as well. They were being erratic and playing with the steering to get me out of the raft of one of their riders. The rest of the group, it's kind of fun, but yeah.
We were on a ladder race, not this one that I dropped out of, but the one before on Lock Loop doing Breakaway Bray, and the guy was steering to the inside and it looked like he was riding on the grass around the thing. Like it was like right off the course. It's like, okay. this feels cheaty. Good. Well, that's a fun sort of segment of assorted Zwift nonsense to end the podcast, I think. I think on that note, we will say thank you to Chris Greenland. Thank you to John Keenan. Thank you to Steph Etchen. Thank you to Sean Fogelberg. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks for everyone doing herd races. Enjoy your no spring chicken races this weekend and all the rest. Moo and good night.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, Moon.